I appreciate you being here this evening and having this opportunity to speak to you. We're continuing in a study, a series of lessons on the subject of a survey of great Bible epics or great dispensations of the Bible. And we're doing this from the standpoint of just trying to kind of get a grasp on the bigger picture of the Scriptures and what is entailed in that, hopefully to be of some help to those who may not yet have put those pieces of the puzzle together, but would find it helpful to get those pieces in some form or fashion with a little better grasp of them. I appreciate Brother Rood's description of the speaker tonight. Could have variously described him as the younger brother, the taller brother, better looking brother. though I suspect that Jack would have preferred the description that Brother Haley gave to me some time ago. I've told y'all this story before. Jack and I were going to be staying at my aunt and uncle's house. Brother Haley was there as well, and we arrived and we walked into the house. Brother Haley was back in the den, and Jack walked in ahead of me, and he turned the corner, and there's Brother Haley, and Brother Haley said, "Oh, Jack, it's so good to see you. How are you doing? Where's the other one?" So you take your pick. The younger one or just the other one. It really doesn't matter. Well, we have in our study thus far talked basically about three general time periods that it may be helpful to try and look at the Bible in, and have identified them as a patriarchal period, a Mosaic period, and a Christian period. And the patriarchal period, referring to a dispensation when God was dealing with mankind, basically through the fathers, through the heads of families, and that's really what a dispensation is. It's not just a time period. It's a time period when God is dealing with people and with mankind in a particular way. And so, the Mosaic period, then, is a period, which we'll talk about this evening, is the time period when God was dealing particularly with a portion of mankind, the Hebrew people, through the law of Moses. And that doesn't mean he wasn't dealing with other people during that period of time, because he was. He was dealing with those who were non-Hebrews, in much the same way that he had prior. But the focus of the Scriptures, as one begins to try to piece the big picture together, the focus of the Scriptures during this second Bible period is upon the Mosaic dispensation, the dealings of God with the Hebrew people through his servant Moses. And then the third period that we'll look at in our future study, is the Christian period, and that is the time period in which God deals with mankind through his Son, Jesus Christ. But as we have talked about previously, as we're trying to kind of get a grip on the overall picture of the Bible, it's helpful to remember that somewhere in the mid-15th century before Christ, that Moses began writing these first five books of the Bible. The book of Genesis is kind of a retrospective look, as from that mid-15th century, Moses looks back and he gives kind of a primeval history in the first 11 chapters of the book of Genesis. Talks about creation and events that transpired for generations following the creation. Talks about great events like the flood. He talks about what happened before the flood. He talks about what happens after the flood. all the way up through the first 11 chapters of Genesis. Then in chapter 12, the focus really begins to kind of center in on one particular, very important line of thought. And that is when God begins, through Moses, he begins to describe his dealings with a man named Abram, whom he later renames as Abraham. And he gives this man, Abram, a promise. He forms a covenant with this man, Abram, that if he would follow him, that if Abram would take his family and follow the directions of God, that God would bless him, that God would raise up a great nation of people from him that we later learn are the Hebrew people, and that God would give a great land for them to dwell in, which we later learn would be the land of Canaan, and that through Abraham, God would bless all nations of the earth, which we later learn would be through Jesus Christ, through the Messiah, who would come through this lineage of Abraham's descendants that would become known as this Hebrew nation. And so really Genesis chapter 12 through chapter 50 is a tracing of events that record what happens regarding this promise that was made to Abraham. And so we see Abraham's son Isaac and his son Jacob, and then the 12 sons of Jacob, Jacob would later be named Israel, and his 12 sons, including then Joseph. And the story is traced all the way up to the end of Genesis about this family and the significance of this family. And essentially, the descendants of Abraham, this family, through the end of the book of Genesis and into the opening chapters of the book of Exodus, we see them coming to Egypt. And it's really, at first, into a very preferred position that they enter the land of Egypt. For Joseph, the descendant of Abraham, Joseph was a highly placed, the second highest ruler in all the land of Egypt. And so his family were brought down to the land, and they occupied a choice part of the land. And they lived in a very privileged position for many years. But as God had actually told Abraham back in the Genesis, the 15th chapter, they would eventually fall into servitude to the Egyptians, and they would become slaves. And so we read in the book of Exodus, in the opening chapters of Exodus, how these people were indeed slaves and were in need of deliverance. And that's exactly what God sets out to do, and what God sets out to accomplish for these people. And that brings us really to the point that we want to begin looking at this evening in regards to this Mosaic covenant, or this Mosaic dispensation. And it's really quite interesting in some ways. The most expansive period of time in these three dispensations is that first period, that patriarchal period. And really, we have the least amount of information about that period. A more limited space of time, probably about, something over 1,000 years, probably a little over 1,000 years occupies this Mosaic period. And we have a lot more information about it than we do the patriarchal period. And then when you get to the Christian dispensation, it's an even shorter period of time, in some senses, an even shorter period of written and recorded information in that Christian period. But we still have a bit more information about that period of time than we do that expansive patriarchal period. But tonight we're going to be looking I hope in as quick a way as we can. We're going to be looking at this Mosaic period. And I think I recall a story about a fellow one time, a Jewish man. He actually asked a friend of mine, why are our scriptures, referring to the Jewish people, why are our scriptures in your Bible? And that's not a bad question. And it seems as though it is addressed in the New Testament. Romans chapter 15 and verse 4, the Apostle Paul writes about the things that were written earlier were written for our instruction, that through perseverance and encouragement of the Scriptures, we might have hope. There's encouragement for the Christian to be found in these Old Testament Scriptures. I also like Paul's statement over in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 along these lines, where he says in verse 11, now these things happened to them, referring to people of the Old Testament era. He said, these things happened to them as an example, and they were written for our instruction, upon whom the ends of the ages has come. So you kind of get that flavor of the dispensation and the unfolding of the dispensations in that statement by the Apostle Paul. So if you are just kind of beginning to put the pieces of this puzzle together, don't be discouraged about the amount of, about the volume of information that's contained in these Old Testament scriptures and in this Mosaic period. It's there for a reason. It's there for your good. It's there for your own well-being. Well, I would say to you that it just to take a quick overview of the Old Testament, we first need to take a look at Moses' continued work in revealing, as God revealed to him, in revealing Scripture. He has, as we've talked about in Genesis, has made this kind of introduction, this introductory material available about God, about who God is. And in many ways, he is making known to this nation of the Hebrews about this God, whom they are now at Mount Sinai meeting for the first time, if you will, and prepared to enter into a covenant with this God. So those pages of the book of Genesis are quite important to them. But when you get into the book of Exodus then, basically what you see is in the first 18 verses, a record of how, the first 18 chapters, a record of how God delivered Israel out of Egypt. And the story of the Pharaoh and the plagues over Egypt and how Moses led the people from their captors. And then in chapters 19 through 24, you have essentially the offering of the covenant that God invites this nation of people to enter into with Him. It's made known to the people, and the unique relationship that this covenant would call them into, a relationship like no other relationship that God has with any other nation on the face of the earth. This covenant is a law code. It's intended to establish a nation of people. It's intended to establish this nation of people in the land of Canaan. It's intended to establish them as a theocratic nation. That is, a nation in which God is in control. A socio-religious nation. A society where there is really no separation between their social laws and rules and their religious rules. If you were driving to services here tonight and a policeman pulled you over and gave you a ticket for speeding, Well, you'd go down to the courthouse or wherever, and you'd probably just write a check and put it in an envelope and mail it in. But you know, you would settle that as a civil matter. I don't think you would be too overly concerned about spiritual matters involved in that. But that's not the way it was under this law code that these people were entering into with God, that Moses was making known to them. A violation of a social issue of some sort was also a religious matter. And they would be expected to offer sacrifice and to make appeasement of God. This law code, of course, began with the Ten Commandments that we're familiar with. The Ten Commandments that essentially epitomized all of the law, all of the code that was to be given over a period of many years. You see, Moses is not the only one who delivers this law. It is in a state of being delivered over a lengthy period of time. This is not the Mosaic period because Moses lived throughout it. It is the Mosaic period because Moses was the spokesman that God chose to initially establish this relationship with Israel. But the people were to learn from Moses and from the other instructors of this law how to be holy, how they were to be set apart for the use of God's purposes. Moses comes down from Mount Sinai there, in Numbers 19 through 24, after he's received the law, he comes down from Mount Sinai, he finds the people engaged in sin. He intercedes on their behalf, and God accepts his intercession, and so the covenant is preserved. And the building of the tabernacle then can a dwelling place for God, a place where the people could meet God. That construction was allowed to go forward. And that's really what Exodus, the book of Exodus, is all about. The book of Leviticus that Moses also wrote, we see the people still encamped at Mount Sinai. And there are many laws that are issued in the book of Leviticus that deal with the Levites, the tribe that was particularly identified as the tribe of the priest, those that would intercede for, that would be the mediators between the people and God. And so you have a lot of instruction about the priest and what the priest's duties were. You have a lot of instructions about the sanctuary where the priest would offer up much of their service. You have a lot of instruction about the worship that the people were to offer up. And that's basically what Leviticus is about. But we need to keep this in mind. We're still talking about being at Mount Sinai, right there in that mid-15th century B.C., right after the people have been brought out of Egypt. All of this is setting the foundation for this relationship with God. The book of Numbers also begins at Mount Sinai, but it records the movement of the people, a history or a record of the people as they move from Mount Sinai toward the Promised Land, towards Canaan, where God was going to take them and possess the land for them. It was just a few days' journey from Mount Sinai to the Promised Land. It took 40 years for them to make the journey. Someone has observed that's what happens when murmuring and complaining goes along. Because that's exactly what people did. They murmured and they complained about God and what God was doing through Moses, and They get to the land and they send spies over there, and the spies come back and say, oh, this is too tough an assignment. We can't possibly do this. And so the people just, they just lose belief. And that's a key part of the message of the book of Numbers, is that here these people are newly committed to a covenant with God. And what are they doing? They're breaking the covenant. They're going back on their commitment to God. And so they wander the wilderness while that generation dies off. Basically, God says, you're not going in because of your unbelief. I'll take your kids in, but you're not going in. So the wandering in the wilderness is waiting for that next generation to come along, and they're allowed to go in to the land of Canaan. The book of Deuteronomy is really just a series of three speeches made by Moses, as Moses draws near the end of his life. And he speaks to that next generation and says to them essentially, don't be like your mothers and daddies. Don't do the same things they did. Don't make the same mistakes they made. Follow the covenant. It's a commitment that has been made, and you must be true to that commitment if you want to be successful in the land, if you want to reap the benefits of the land. And so that, admittedly, in a very limited way, is just kind of an overview of these first five books of the Old Testament and what Moses was accomplishing as he wrote these books. But as I said, Moses was not the only one who was involved in revealing God's will to the Hebrews. He's certainly not the only author of what comprises the Old Testament law or the Old Testament or the Old Testament. And so we have to also look at some things that are said by others. And over a period of something less than 1,000 years, from the time of Moses' death all the way through to the destruction of the kingdom of Israel, the destruction of the nation, its final fall, there are a number of books of history that are revealed in the scriptures. The book of Joshua follows Deuteronomy, and it records the story of the people actually eventually entering the land and pursuing a war of conquest over the land and taking possession of it. Following Joshua comes a period that lasts for some 300 years almost of the judges, where the people are ruled over by individuals who are raised up by the Lord and identified simply as judges. The book of Ruth is also written in that same general time period. Book of Judges is an interesting book in that it records a sad story, something of a downward spiral. With each judge, I think you see the rise of a character, though a leader over God's people, but a person who in character is something a little less than the previous leader. And it just kind of goes down and down and down. You get on down the line of judges to Samson. Well, I think probably most are familiar with some of the faults of Samson. It continues on down to Eli. The last of the judges, though, is an exception to that. And the last of the judges is a man named Samuel, who is certainly head and shoulders above most of the others who served as judges in the way of character and the way of fidelity to God. He also serves in the capacity of a prophet. And we're going to talk about the role of prophets here in just a few moments. But these are critical periods of time in the development of this nation. Samuel marks the end of this period of the judges and the beginning of a new era, though it's still in the Mosaic age, but something of a new era in the history of God's people and what is oftentimes referred to as the United Kingdom. A king is sought by the people. We would have a king. We want to be like all of the other nations around us. Everybody else has kings. Why can't we have a king? And there are great lessons contained in that. But we see the the rise of this kingdom now in Israel, recorded in the first and second books of Samuel, in 1 Kings, a portion of 1 Kings, the first 11 chapters, the book of 1 Chronicles, and the first 12 chapters of 2 Chronicles. All of these tell the story of this time of the kingdom. Just kind of a quick overview of this period of the kingdom. It's a time when, of course, Saul is the first of the kings, but he's a bit of a rebel, becomes a rebellious king, and the kingdom is taken from him, given to another, so that the dynasty that could have been in the house of Saul actually falls to the house of David. David becomes the successor of Saul, and he then is followed by his own son Solomon. And it's under the reign of Solomon that Israel really reaches the pinnacle of its existence. During the time of Saul and during the time of even in the time of David, there are periodic wars that are fought where the Hebrews are still really consolidating their control in this land that they have been in for a few centuries now, but they're still fighting these wars to gain a solid control. But it's under Solomon's reign that is pretty well established, and the kingdom never was as high as it was under Solomon's reign. You notice on this screen there some of the wisdom literature that's found in the Bible and their association with the reigns of these kings, or at least of two of them, David and Solomon. Certainly there were other people who wrote some of the Psalms. Most of them, however, are associated with David. Solomon wrote many of the Proverbs, but there are other authors of the Proverbs that come from other time periods in the history of the kingdom. Solomon often thought to be the author of the book of Ecclesiastes and the Song of Solomon. But these two kings, David and Solomon, were rather prolific writers in their own right. And so it may be helpful to be able to kind of fix those books in that historical setting. But to go back and look at this, continue looking at this overview, where we've talked about this period of the United Kingdom, and that almost all, clearly suggests a period of a divided kingdom. That is, a time when the kingdom falls apart. And that does indeed happen. Recorded in 1 Kings 12 through the book of 2 Kings, 2 Chronicles 11 through 28 also record this period of time when Israel divides into two separate kingdoms. And you have a northern kingdom that's made up of 10 tribes, southern kingdom made up of 2 tribes. The northern kingdom exists. This breakup occurs around 930 B.C., after Solomon's death. And Solomon's son Rehoboam is unable to establish control over the whole kingdom, and he loses the bulk of it. And that northern kingdom exists then for about 200 years after that, until 722 B.C., when it falls And we'll notice that there's a lot that's said in the prophets about that going to happen. The northern kingdom was warned, duly warned. But in 722 it falls, and it really never comes back, not as a nation. The southern kingdom continues on to 586 BC when it falls eventually to the Babylonians. And there is a period of the captivity of these people of the southern kingdom actually begins in about 605 BC. But it's completed in 586. But beginning from that 605 date, there's a period of 70 years of captivity where the Babylonians hold the southern kingdom. But they are eventually released and allowed those that wanted to go back to their homeland and to reestablish the kingdom. So they're able to go back. So a portion, a remnant, is able to return to the land in the southern kingdom. But throughout all of this, there are messages from the prophets. Now, when we think about prophets, a lot of times what people think about is, well, these are people that tell the future. They foretell what's going to happen. And it is true that there is a certain aspect of that in the work that prophets did. But they were more than foretellers. They were forth-tellers. They were the word prophet really more literally means more than future teller. It means spokesman of God. That's what prophets were. And you have both literary and non-literary prophets. Again, a couple of examples of the non-literary prophets who didn't write anything. Elijah. The prophet Elisha. We have nothing in writing that these men did. We have record of their ministries. We have record of their messages. But they just were not writers. Other prophets were. Prophets who apparently recorded their message just for the sake of time. I've just kind of generalized the time period where these prophets fit in. And basically what you'll have to do as you try to piece these things together is to look at each of these prophets and pay attention to who the prophet is writing to. Is he writing to these people in the northern kingdom? Is he writing to the people in the southern kingdom? Or some of them are writing to both. Some of them are writing to God's people before that division ever happened. For instance, Obadiah, probably somewhere in the 9th century or in the 800s B.C. Joel, and also a 9th century prophet. When you begin to get into the 8th century, obviously, the 700s, you're getting into that period of time where that separation of the kingdom happened. And so a prophet may be writing to the north, he may be writing to the south, or he may be writing to both. So you just have to pay attention to the message to try and pull that out of the message. You've got Isaiah, a late 8th century, early 7th century prophet, Hosea, Amos, Jonah, Micah. These were prophets of the 8th century or the 700s. And again, writing many of them to the northern kingdom just before it fell. Kind of, you know, God's last appeal to them in many respects. Jeremiah, 7th, to late 7th, early 6th century. Daniel is an interesting character, late 7th century. He's in that first group of Jewish captives taken from the southern kingdom into Babylon. And he's there the whole time, the 70 years. He's there. And so you get in the book of Daniel a perspective on what's happening in Babylon during this period of captivity. But also you've got Nahum and Habakkuk, Zephaniah, 7th century prophets. Ezekiel, a 6th century prophet, he was in what was the second period, or the second group of people taken captive by the Babylonians out of that southern kingdom, and in 597 BC. And Ezekiel gives another perspective about Babylon and the captives in Babylon. Then you have the post-exilic prophets. That is, the prophets who spoke to God's people in the time after the Babylonians are defeated by the Persians, and the Persians allowed people, the captive peoples, to go back to their homes. And so the Jews that wanted to go back could go back, and many of them did, and God spoke to them through prophets like Haggai and Zechariah. The books, and this can be kind of tricky, the books of Ezra and Nehemiah and Esther fall kind of early in the order of the Old Testament books as we have them in our Bibles. But they're really rather late books in the chronological order of things that happen. And in these prophecies, like Ezra and Nehemiah, you get a picture of what God is wanting His people to do when they go back to their homeland. And they go back and they rebuild the temple. And Haggai has some to say about that. And they rebuild the walls around the city of Jerusalem. And Nehemiah has some to say about that. The book of Esther is an interesting book because it tells about the Persians, once they have become the dominant force in the world and are willing to allow people, conquered peoples, to go back to their homes. Esther tells the story of the Jews from the perspective of living among the Persian overlords, if you will, for a period of time. The last book of the Old Testament, the book of Malachi, he's a 5th century prophet. He writes around about 400 years before Christ. And his is the last recorded message, apparently, of these literary prophets. His is an appeal to a people who have been back in their land and reestablished in their land and recommitted and serving again in this covenant of God. But yet you read the book of Malachi and the message is just the same. And this is recurring over and over again through these Old Testament books. You're just not being true to the covenant. You're not being true to your commitment that you've made to God. And so with the book of Malachi, in many ways, the Old Testament record closes. Now, the Mosaic Age does not close with Malachi. It's going to go on for another 400 years. And it's in the Mosaic Age that we find our first introduction to Christ. And he's described as being born of a woman, born under the law. And it is that law of Moses that he lived under as a Jew. And so the opening events of the New Testament are indeed still about this Mosaic era. But they are introductory to the third and the final age. The age that, as Paul described it to the Corinthian there, the end of the ages. And next Sunday evening, we'll give our attention to that. I hope this has been as limited as it is. I hope it's been of some help to you in kind of piecing some things together. This is quite an important part of the Bible. And so as you begin your study of the Bible, as you begin to try to kind of piece things together and come to an understanding of what it's all about, Don't overlook this part of the Bible, because it's quite critical to your understanding of what God has done and what God intends to do. If you're not a Christian tonight, you need to become one. You become one by what you learn from the New Testament. You become a Christian in this age of Christ by obeying Christ. And if it's your desire this evening to do that, we encourage you to come in obedience to Him while we stand and sing.